The Blaze Radio Network. On demand.
Welcome to the Glenn Beck Podcast. It's Stu. Glenn's here as well. We're talking about today's program that's about to be listened to by you, which we thank you for. I don't know. I hope it's a challenging one a little bit today. Glenn goes through a really interesting point on the Cohen thing, and we spent a lot of time on that today. I hope this is a one-day thing for us, honestly. I don't want to continue to do it every day, but it's the big story. Glenn kind of goes through his analogy of why people are supporting Trump through this, why they look at the accusations and maybe differently than the media thinks they should.
Yeah, I think there's two main things that the podcast should cover today, and that is what happened and understanding O.J. Simpson and seeing how that played out and why people were cheering for O.J. Simpson when they knew he was a killer, but they denied it at the time. Now polls show they don't. And also, you know, the beehive or the hornet's nest on your front porch, and Trump being the guy with a stick of the, you know, broomstick poking it, trying to make it fall down.
We'll go through that right here at the start of the show. Also, we'll get into the Asia Argento thing.
Ooh.
This is a mess, and there's all sorts of stuff going on in the Me Too movement and one of its founders. And we talked to Arthur Herman, a historian, kind of looking back at the historical precedents for this type of thing. And he was pretty, I think really saw it from through the lens of Trump getting a raw deal as far as through the media and the way that, you know, that has been handled.
Yeah, and a very optimistic look at our future because he knows history. Also, real quick, I just want to promote tomorrow's podcast. We are talking to one of the farmers, in fact, the first farmer in South Africa that has lost his farm or is in the process of losing his farm. He's going to give us a report on what's happening in South Africa. That's on tomorrow's podcast. But let's focus on today. Here's the podcast.
You're listening to the best of the Glenn Beck program. It's Wednesday, August 22nd.
I want to talk to you about what happened in Washington yesterday and what's happening with the press and what's happening with America. But I need you to listen because this is a nuanced conversation. Because this is not a I'm all on board with one thing or I'm all on board for the other. This is not all black and white, and it is certainly not all one topic. So I want to talk to you about what happened with the two convictions yesterday and the way the Trump media is handling it, the way the left media is handling it, why it matters or doesn't matter. So let me start here. First of all, Stu, help me out if I'm missing anybody. Bannon, Flynn, Lewandowski, Cohen, Manafort, Roger Stone, all people we said, these are not the best people. This is going to, you want impeachment. Forget about Hillary Clinton impeachment. They will never impeach her, but they will impeach Donald Trump because these people are dirty.
It's certainly throw Omarosa in that mix.
Yeah.
As well.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's good rundown.
These are the people that we warned against, and we said there will be impeachment hearings because of the people he's surrounding himself with, Manafort in particular. But let's start with Cohen. We knew who he was, and I wasn't comfortable with a president who had somebody known as a, quote, fixer. That's not a normal thing to have. That is something that you might have if you are used to really hardball politics in a dirty city like New York. You might need a fixer. Now, we played audio of him way before the election of the way he handled people and the way he handled the press. He's a dirty, awful guy. Really bad. Would not be counted as a friend of mine by any stretch of the imagination. I wouldn't want to be at a party with this guy. We know he plays dirty. We know he did what he's being accused of. He's now admitted it. And the president knew. And we know that. I think it's, you know, let's not be the Democrats who were, you know, with Bill Clinton. When Bill Clinton was in office, we all knew he was a dog. There was a chance that maybe he had a turning point because he went on 60 Minutes and he said, I've had this epiphany and this turning point in my life. And, you know, we've already talked about it and we're just trying to heal our marriage. And so there was a point where I'm like, OK, let's give the guy the benefit of the doubt. As we now know, that was not that was politics. That was just a show. OK, we knew and the Democrats knew that that's who he was and they didn't care. Now, are we going to care about Cohen? Does it matter? It does to me. It does to me that Cohen goes to jail. It does to me if the president colluded and broke the law. It does matter to me. But does it matter today? In reality, in the world we're living in? No. And I'll explain why in a minute. First of all, would Bush have been impeached for this crime? Yes. Would Clinton? Maybe. Would Obama? Definitely not. Will Trump? Call me the day after the election and I'll let you know. It's who controls the House. If the Democrats control the House, they will impeach him, but he will not be convicted because the Republicans control the Senate. That's just the way it is. It's really important to understand that America is not the same. Basically, you cannot indict a sitting president. An indictment for the sitting president is impeachment, okay? That does not mean you're removed from office. It first goes to the House and they issue their indictment, which is an impeachment papers, which says you have to show up for this trial because we think you're guilty of something. And then the trial is held in the Senate. The president, basically, if he wasn't the president, would be labeled today a unindicted co-conspirator. OK, now. Let's take that and set it off to the side because it has nothing to do with Russia. It has nothing to do with the Russian investigation. It has nothing to do with collusion. On that part, the president is right. It has nothing to do with that. It has everything to do with who this president is and who he is surrounded by. But let's separate that from Russia. What Cohen is convicted of, or about to be convicted of, is paying off two women to influence the election at the request of the president, something that the president and Cohen both denied. Now, if he had proof that the president colluded, you can bet that the prosecutors would have given him a plea deal to testify against the president, because that's a pretty big deal. But he has no credibility. Now, the press is making this into a big deal. Well, look, he didn't even make a plea deal. He didn't even make a plea deal, and he fingered the president. Yeah, but is anybody going to believe it? Was he lying then, or is he lying now? He has no credibility and obviously nothing to back that up. No evidence, or I'm guessing he would have gotten a plea deal. So we know we can't take his word for it. But it does matter. Manafort also has nothing to do with Russia. It has nothing to do with collusion. On this, the president and the White House are right. The best thing the president can do, and if I were advising the president, I would say, make sure that you give another speech today where you're not praising Manafort. Give a speech to say, look, none of this happened. What he was convicted of, none of it happened while he was with me. This is all happening beforehand. I guess there were some people who said, hey, don't hire Paul Manafort. He's a really bad guy. But I didn't listen to them, and I hired him. But I promptly fired him as well. So none of this has anything to do. He colluded with Russia, but before Trump, and his collusion with Russia was to enslave the Ukraine. He's very corrupt. So was Roger Stone. They were partners. Clearly guilty. And he is not a good guy. Now, here's where this is going to get dicey. There's speculation, and again, speculation. So why are we even talking about it? Because I think we need to be clear on what's happening. There's speculation that Trump might pardon Manafort. If he does on these particular charges that have nothing to do with Donald Trump, nothing to do with the election, this is not a witch hunt. This guy is a bad guy. It's wrong. And we'll have to deal with that with the president if indeed he does it. But to pardon Manafort would be a gigantic mistake. Now, can you make the case that this is a witch hunt? Yeah. If it wasn't Donald Trump, he probably, if he was working for Hillary Clinton, he'd be a free man today. We know that, but that's a different topic. So what we know, none of this from Manafort involves Trump or candidate Trump involved in Russia at all. So here's why it should matter, but it won't. Our president, no matter who they are, needs good, honest people around him. I think he has gotten rid of all of the bad people pretty quickly. They have imploded on him. But he needs good, honest people, and we need transparency. I make the same case that I made against Van Jones. Look, I don't have a vendetta against Van Jones. I didn't even want Van Jones fired. I wanted an explanation. Did you knowingly hire a communist? If so, what does that say about you and your philosophy and your Marxist tendencies? The White House didn't want to answer those questions, so they instead fired Van Jones. That's a problem. We need transparency. That's what America is really looking for when it comes to politicians. If you're paying hush money before a campaign, people should know about it. Now, we're living in a world where truth doesn't really matter anymore. Look at Rose McGowan and Asia Argento. You know that Asia admitted finally yesterday that, yes, okay, I did sleep with that 17-year-old. Well, that's against the law. And you just spent all this time denying it, blaming it on your dead boyfriend. Are you kidding me? She going to be held to the same standard as anybody else? No, probably not. That's the problem. The problem is we don't trust anyone. Republicans for a long time, and I speak to the left here because I need you to understand, Republicans feel as though, and I believe it was fairly true, that we kept putting up Boy Scouts. I mean, look at George Bush, a frickin' Boy Scout, okay? An Eagle Scout. If he wasn't the stereotypical Eagle Scout, I promise to do my duty and, you know, do my, you know, the best of whatever that, I can't even remember it anymore, to do my duty on my honor for God and my country. That's who he was. And look, they made him into, you know, Darth Vader, the worst human ever to live. Same thing with Mitt Romney. Mitt Romney is literally an Eagle Scout. And look what they made Mitt Romney. He was the devil. He was the most giving, honest, decent guy. I disagree with him. But you cannot say that this guy's character was flawed the way they tried to make it out to be, that he was some greedy rich guy. He's the exact opposite of that. So the Republicans felt like we're playing by the rules, but you're not. You won't accept anybody. I mean, they're against Mike Pence. Mike Pence is worse than Donald Trump. Wait a minute. You just said Donald Trump is the worst human being ever to live. He's a Nazi. He's a white supremacist. How bad does Mike Pence have to be worse than that? But that's the way they treat everything. Also, Republicans felt like we had to play by the rules and the Democrats didn't. The IRS scandal. Can you imagine if Donald Trump was doing this, using the IRS to target Democrats? Do you think the press would be all over it? Do you think if the president came out and said, hey, you know, that really bad thing that happened where all those people died, including an ambassador, that was caused by a film. And he had the national security advisor and the secretary of state do the same lie. And it was all documented that they changed this story. Do you really think the press wouldn't care? Do you think Benghazi would have been treated differently if it were Donald Trump? Yes, of course. We don't believe the people in the Beltway. We don't try to trust the other guy's president. We don't trust the press. My father said to me, when I was very little and Nixon resigned, my father said, kind of to himself, and I heard it as we were watching that resignation, my father said, this is bullcrap. And I just looked at him. And he said, they all do it. He just got caught. Man, that felt wrong. I don't want my president. I don't want all the presidents to do wrong things and get away with it. But that has changed now. Now it is, they all do it. But the press only cares about when one side does it. To me, that's worse. That's worse, and it's getting worse. And I want to give you some examples because it's important for the left to understand why this won't matter to so many people on the right. And until you understand this, it's only going to get worse. In the next 15 minutes, I'm going to explain to you and explain to the left and the media exactly why you can't figure out half of America, why you don't understand it. And for you, anybody who's on the right, what's really going on, why you don't necessarily understand what's going on. When we come to a recognition of the game that we all are playing and what our goals really are, then we could possibly break through some of this crap. But it's getting worse. We don't trust the people in Washington. And so, let's look at it this way. You have a big hornet's nest on your porch. And you don't have any raid. You don't have any way to kill these things. And they are just swarming in. The front door is the only door you have in the house. You got to do something. At some point, if you'd have no other choice, somebody says, just give me a broomstick. And you're like, no, that's a really bad idea. Then they'll swarm you and it'll be really bad. Don't do it. Well, we got to do something because we can't live like this with the hornet's nest. They're building it right at the door. Every time we go in, somebody's going to get stung. We can't live this way. Give me the broomstick. No, don't do that. That's chaos. That's really bad. You got a better choice? All right, here's a broomstick, right? That's what's happening to us. Donald Trump is the guy who said, just give me a stick. Just give me the broomstick. I'll take care of it. We know we can't live this way. No one is willing to call the exterminator or get a can of Raid because everybody's in with the hornet's nest. Everyone's profiting off of this giant hornet's condominium. And it will eventually go so far that the people who are living in the house are going to be told, you know what, you're just living in the wrong house. This house belongs really to the hornets. They've built their nest right here, and they're natural, and they're really more important than you are. when you know that that's the direction of the people around you, you do say, here, I've got an idea. You're crazy enough. I'm going to get you a broomstick. Go out and hit that thing a few times. Okay? And if somebody is nuts enough to do it, I'm okay with it. Well, I'm not going to do it, but he will. That's where we are. That's where we are. And I want to make the case of the hornet's nest as our option. The reason why Donald Trump is on the front porch doing something crazy with a stick. It's not because we like it. It's because we feel we have no other option. So the press will not understand why it doesn't matter to the right. The news yesterday that came out. Why it doesn't matter. And why? How can people be standing with Donald Trump? They don't understand it because they refuse to look at the entire picture. Half of this country feels like they not only haven't been listened to, but they have been mocked and ridiculed for a very long time. They've been called stupid, uneducated. They have been called dangerous, anti-government, all kinds of names. We have been played over and over and over again. And people are done because they're seeing this hornet's nest on our front porch. And they're seeing this hornet's nest, and it involves the economy, economics, bailouts, a growing welfare state, the fundamental transformation of America, the ignoring of terrorists. Do you know that the police went in and they demolished the death site or the training camp in New Mexico? Do you know that that's been demolished now? Have you ever heard of a crime scene being demolished?
Very strange.
Very strange. Very strange. So people know that our way of even thinking is under attack. Lest I remind you of yesterday's program where we talked about, what was it, Froles?
No, front Froles, holes, beholes.
Yeah.
Vaginas.
Yes.
Freenesses.
Where we have to change our language on everything. We're seeing this fundamental transformation. Antifa is being held up by CNN and others. Cuomo saying, you know, hey, they're in the right. They're morally. Let me tell you something. As Facebook is taking people down because of threatening language, let me read this. This is from the Austin Antifa. We encourage the formation of a paramilitary organization on two levels. First being those who are mainly unarmed but are prepared and trained to carry out fist fighting or using blunt weapons like axe handles or flagpoles, as well as shields and basic armoring. The second level is more advanced embryo of a Red Army, which is trained militarily and operates as soldiers all the time, engaging in production and mass work among the proletariat and oppressed nations people. It is time for Austin to stand up, shake the bad leadership trying to impose itself on anti-fascism, and come together under a better model of actual resistance and not token performance. When we organize and lead actions, the fascists do not march. Every step they take is met with physical confrontation, and they are bombarded from all sides. On the basis of our principled united front work, fascists and their collaborators can be drowned out, run out, routed, beaten bloody, and even annihilated. These are our principles, and we hold them true, and we aim to hold them to the very finish. That's the Facebook page of Austin Antifa. Now, if Facebook were consistent and actually believed in what they were saying, these guys would not be on here. Antifa would be known what it is to the federal government as a domestic terror group. But instead, they're being excused. The media will not call people out on both sides fairly. And one side is tired of playing by the rules because the other side hasn't played by them for a long time. We didn't understand it. We didn't understand progressivism. And our problem now is we don't understand progressivism as even a thing of the past. We are now in the postmodern era, which changes all the rules. But Americans are fair. But because they don't understand postmodernism, they don't understand why fairness doesn't work. And so we are losing that trait. The O.J. Simpson trial is a great example. If you were white, you didn't understand how people could stand on the sidewalk and cheer for a killer, a guy who was clearly a killer, because it had nothing to do with O.J. Simpson. Just like all of this has nothing to do with Donald Trump, has nothing to do with him. It has everything to do with someone coming up on the porch with that stick and the hornet's nest. O.J. Simpson beat the system that African Americans said had oppressed them forever. He beat the system. That's what they were cheering, not him. And they'll admit that now. Unfortunately, history comes back and does not look at people who make decisions like that kindly, fondly. We don't remember that as a good thing. We can understand it, but it wasn't a good thing. Donald Trump, I believe, would not have been elected had the Democrats been running a clean candidate who was a blue dog candidate. But right now, Americans see our government officials and our media siding with Antifa, appearing to side with terrorists. They don't have a problem with the border. And yet, again, last night, Molly Tibbetts, we find that here's an illegal alien that came into the country illegally. Does that make all illegal immigrants killers? No. But here's a guy who shouldn't have been here. Molly Tibbetts would be alive today if we had a secure border. And it happens over and over again. And the media doesn't care. Instead, they'll hold town halls on the Second Amendment. We're not talking a welfare state anymore. Democrats and the media are now talking about democratic socialism. That is not what's happening in Sweden and Denmark. That is radical to the people in the Netherlands. The Netherlands is a giant welfare state. We're talking now about about getting rid of capitalism. So now, why would people support Donald Trump? Because there is too much at risk. I don't trust the media. I don't trust the Democrats. I don't trust the Republicans. I don't trust Donald Trump. But I know that Donald Trump is not trying to kill capitalism. Look, I want to make this clear. The media is not responsible or not to blame. And I know if anybody writes this story, they're going to say, Glenn Beck blames the media. No, they're not to blame for this. Cohen, Manafort, and the president, all of the president's problems boil down to the people who are involved. Manafort, Cohen, and the president. Period. But the media played a huge role in his election, and why so many people will stand by him. If they would just stop praising Antifa and call them for what they are, if they would stop trying to change the world into this postmodernist form, we might actually listen to them. When the president says they're the enemy of the people, no. But they are an enemy to Western civilization if they don't stop on this track. Postmodernism is designed to correct the world's greatest error of the Western civilization. It is designed to take it apart. And so every time the media or the left plays into the fourth wave feminists like Linda Sarsour, you're killing us. You're killing us. and you're driving people into the arms of anybody who will step onto our porch and say, I'll get rid of that hornet's nest. Because we know that all the people, all the bug spray people, they're coming. And they're not really bug spray people. They're in with the bugs. They're in with the hornets. And they're coming. And they're going to say, you know what? You don't even belong in this house. The hornets were here long before you were. Hornets are natural. And where they go, they go. I mean, you can go anywhere. So you lose your house, get out. And I, you know what? I say this as a crazy example, but there are many of us who believe that's exactly where we're headed. And we don't believe the press will stand up for humans over hornets. We don't believe the Democrats will stand up for humans over hornets. And that's why. We know who he is. We've baked all this in. We know the Cohen. Anybody who is, anybody today who's saying, well, I'm not sure if the president really did have sex, please. I'm not sure if he really did, you know, pay off it. Please. We know who he is. We've baked it in. We've made our choice because we find postmodernism more dangerous than him. We see the fundamental transformation of our nation and we don't like it. And we find the fundamental transformation of America where there is no enlightenment, there is no reason, there is only bullying and pushing and shoving and shooting until everyone agrees with whatever the political correct term of the day is. They don't want any of it. And they find that much more dangerous. What we have to understand is that we are the people who stood and cheered for O.J. Simpson. And we have to explain to the left why we're standing and cheering. And we have to do it without vengeance. And we shouldn't be cheering. We should not be cheering. We should be explaining why we got here in hopes that somebody will actually listen and say, okay, okay, I understand that. All right, let's work together to fix that. Because we don't want to be cheering for O.J. Simpson. We don't want to be cheering if Donald Trump pardons Manafort, which he should not do. Because here's what's crazy. Because we are so angry, we are so outraged, and because we are standing for a righteous cause, the stopping of the fundamental transformation of the United States and the Western world into something that is not Western. Because we're standing up for that, we are not realizing that the tools that we are using, the anger, the outrage, the people that we're standing up for and defending, the things that we're saying, yeah, we can silence that person, we are actually fundamentally transforming America as well, just in a different way. I want the America that believed in fairness. I want the America that sees everyone as an individual. I want the America that has compassion. I want the America that can listen to both sides. I want the America that was based in common sense and reason, science. And right now, neither side is leading us to that America.
The best of the Glenn Beck program.
So are you a zero or a one? Facebook wants to know. Facebook is, they have a new reputation score, and you'll either be a one or a zero. For a year now, Facebook has been developing a system to rate the trustworthiness of you, the user. People are apparently given a trustworthy score of a scale from 1 to 0, or 0 to 1, whichever way you'd like to look at that, because we all look at things differently now, or do we? Now, I'm no math genius, but it seems like that's a pretty small scale. Don't you think, Stu? And do you think we're a 0 or a 1? It's binary. We don't live in a binary world. Looks like the choice is either you're trustworthy or you're a liar. Now, why is Facebook doing this? Because we're not supposed to judge people. No, no, no. No. And how can people be assigned to this binary trustworthy rating in a postmodern world of gender fluidity and front holes? Honestly.
I gotta assume they're using decimals here, right? Like you're a point, you could be a 0.7 or a 0.3.
I don't know. Maybe. I don't know. So. Why not just make it a scale 1 to 10? 1 to 0.
That's a good point.
Supposedly, Facebook is just trying to measure user credibility to help identify anybody who might be malicious. I want to know my score. I want to know my score. The whole effort is driven by the whole election, you know, Russia fake news fiasco. But it's never ending, and it's a battle that is going to just continue to heat up, because no matter what Facebook comes up with, people game the system. In 2015, for example, Facebook gave the users the ability to report a post as false. Well, at first, any post marked false was forwarded to a third party fact checker. Then a lot of users just were like, wait a minute, we can just mark this untrue because they disagreed with the person or the company posting the content. Now it's common for Facebook users on the left and the right to target publishers by flagging stories as false. The third-party fact checkers were inundated, so Facebook built a system to try to determine if a post is likely to be false. You know, to save the actual humans some time. But then Facebook went a step further and developed a way to assess whether users who were flagging posts as false were trustworthy themselves. Facebook is now monitoring users that flag a lot of published content as false. They're also looking at the data to discover which publishers users consider to be trustworthy. The Washington Post first reported the story yesterday, but Facebook will not reveal what else it tracks to determine, your reputation. They also wouldn't say whether every Facebook user has a score, or how the scores are used, why it's so secretive. Facebook is afraid that if it's too transparent about this, it'll enable hostile users to further game the system. How about we take the gaming out of this? How about you just allow us to adjust the algorithm to suit us? How about that one? I mean, in a world of customization, why don't you just build the platform, because that's what you promised us you were doing. Otherwise, man, you would be responsible for a lot of lawsuits, wouldn't you? Yeah, that's right. You can't be held responsible for anything that people say because you're just a platform. Okay, you're not a publisher. So we, the publishers, why can't we have access and say, I want a little more of this or a little less of this? Because who are you to tell me what I want? Imagine somewhere deep in the vault at Facebook, your profile may have the iconic like symbol next to it. Or it may have a thumbs down. Now, let me ask you this question. If you're a conservative, how likely is it that you have a 1 or a thumbs up? Arthur Herman was on with us yesterday, senior fellow of the Hudson Institute. He wrote the book Freedom's Forge, which I had him on yesterday to talk about, and we never got around to talking about it because there was so much other stuff to talk to him about. I think he's one of my favorite historians, favorite writer on history. Freedom's Forge is an absolute must read, and we never got around to it. And now, Arthur, I had you on today to talk about Freedom's Forge, but I don't think we're going to make it today either.
I don't think so.
I'm just saying, with the news of the day and everything that is happening with the Trump White House, I was wondering if there's anything in history that we can use as a benchmark for what's going on.
It's going to be tough to do. We're definitely in uncharted territory, and I think that's one of the things that scares conventional minds.
Can we start here, which you are not
part.
Right.
And is also what scares the media, because they, like the Washington establishment, prefer a political landscape which is highly predictable.
Right.
And it follows the usual patterns and in which the usual alliances, both ideological as well as practical in a political sense, are pretty much what they have been for the last couple of decades. And Trump has destroyed all that. And and this is the real point, isn't it, Glenn? It's his voters have destroyed all that.
Yes.
They think by going after Trump that somehow if they get rid of Trump, things will go back to normal, what they see as their normal. And this is not true. Trump is not the cause of the disruption that's roiling our politics today and our culture. He is symptomatic of it. And he was sent there with a mission by his voters to, they said, we need a bull in this China shop because we've got the China shop has a lot of crockery that badly needs breaking. And so all of these scandals that are now, you know, supposedly surrounding his links to Cohen and Manafort, and the Cohen one is, I think, the more pertinent right now because of their long relationship. But the point is that voters discounted this in 2016.
So
they're not going to be moved by this. And I think once again, we'll have predictions by media and pundits that at long last we've found the magic bullet that will kill the Trump presidency. We'll never have to deal with him again. And I think they're going to be wrong.
So last hour, I likened him and our support of Donald Trump as we're living in a house and there's a giant hornet's nest right by our front door. And it's the only door we can use. And we know that all of the people who are said to, you know, be the bug, you know, killers and bug removal systems and everything else, they're all in with the hornets, and they're all coming to the house to tell us, you know what, the hornets are protected, and you really, they were here long before you, so you don't belong in the house as much as the hornets do. So we know we're about to lose our house to crazy people, and there's somebody in the house who we don't necessarily like, and we don't necessarily think is the best, and we don't always agree with him, but he's like, you know what, before they get here, give me a broom, I'm going to take that out. And yeah, you're thinking, bad idea, but not taking it out is going to be worse.
Yeah, I think I like your metaphor. And I think it describes exactly the relationship between Trump and his voters. It goes back to what we were talking about yesterday, doesn't it? That when you look at the great public figures, and I think Donald Trump is going to emerge as one of our most significant presidents, certainly the most significant in the last 50 years.
How do you mean that?
Because since Reagan,
I think Barack Obama was significant, really significant.
Perhaps in a negative way, but I mean in the sense of Trump is really kind of totally reshaping the political landscape. What Obama did in his 8 years was to work within the existing political landscape to make certain changes in society. In culture, the whole growth of the deep state that took place during his tenure. All of these were done in ways that didn't disturb or roil the conventional institutions within which Washington operates. And this is one of the reasons why he was able to get away with it. And but at the same time, what you saw was a growing revolt in the country itself. We saw that, didn't we, in the midterms. The midterms is where you could see the wave of change coming that would ultimately put Trump into power. It started with the Tea Party, which, as you know, Republican Party establishment ignored and then tried to suppress. It came again in those pivotal midterms in 2014 when it really became clear that there was going to be big changes coming in Washington, and Trump was the crest of that wave. But let's go back to the question about where Trump is with regard to his voters. They sent him in to do a job, and they were perfectly aware of the fact the man had a less than perfect past. They were perfectly aware that, for example, our evangelical friends, of the fact that Trump certainly doesn't fit the stereotype of what a candidate that
you are so kind. You are so kind.
Doesn't fit in at all,
right?
But they saw through the attempts, and I think they do today, the attempts to shame them into abandoning Trump because of his relationships, alleged or real, with porn stars, or his behavior in inappropriate kinds of ways. They know what's going on. That what they're trying to do is to break the Trump coalition on the wheel of morality. And they see through that. They understand that this is the way in which Republican hopefuls and the last round of best hopes for changing Washington had been broken and destroyed. And they see the pattern that's taking place now. The pursuit of Donald Trump, the indictment against Chris Collins, the indictment against Duncan Hunter. I don't know if it's an indictment yet, but on campaign finance reform. Is this purely coincidental? That the earliest supporters of Donald Trump should find themselves in this kind of legal trouble? Is this just simply that one day the Justice Department had a look and said, oh, look, these guys may be violating campaign finance reform, when others walk away?
Rosie O'Donnell is a great
perfect example.
Example.
And look at Barack Obama. Yeah, $2 million of contributions which were deemed illegal, and he was able to walk away with a fine in the process. They understand what's underway here. And yet, Glenn, what I'm going to say is, and it goes back to our theme that we were talking about yesterday, and the theme, I think, of almost all my books, again, the issue of optimism. Look, no one, I think, not even on the left, wants what's happening today. Everybody wants the nightmare we find ourselves to go away. The left and the media and Democrats think they're going to make it go away by getting rid of Trump. If we just get that guy out of there, then all of things will return to normal. They're wrong about that. And I think the Trump supporters want this to go away by having the left and the Democrats and the media and the never Trumpers and the Republicans accept the fact that the man is elected president. Let him do his job. Let's let a president do what we sent him there to do. And the fact is, they're wrong, too. The left and the Democrats and media are never going to accept Trump. It's going to get worse before it gets better, I'm afraid. But the fact that we all recognize the fact that we don't want to be here, that this is not healthy for our country, I think, is a sign that at the end of all of this, and at the end of all of the broken crockery, as I was saying before, and the end of the how this all unfolds, including the midterms in November, that at the end of it, I think we are going to come out okay, just a very different, and I think, and I hope, a better and healthier country at the end of it.
Arthur, I've only got about a minute and a half left. See, I don't know if you can answer this question. I know you studied, the early progressive movement with Woodrow Wilson. You know how the violence reared its head in the 60s, also in the 1930s. With the uprising of communists, and America always, once it starts to see that violence and sees how radical things really are, Americans always recoil from it. Do you think that we're going to recoil from the Antifas and the Democratic Socialists this time, or has the university system done its job?
That's a very good question. You put your finger on one of the key aspects of this, in that this isn't just a revolt by the Trump supporters against the Washington establishment. It's also a revolt on the part of the left. The Washington establishment thinks that they can recruit the left in order to defeat Trump and the right. And I think they're wrong. They're the next targets, and they don't realize that quite yet. I think we will pull back. We did not pull back in 1860. And the reason is because we had a powerful section of the country, the South, which was willing to pull the country apart because they saw a brighter future in that happening. I don't see anyone in that position right now. I think that what people talk about a civil war here, what we're talking about is a series of verbal civil wars of a divided nation. There's no doubt about that. We've been there before. It's just never been as pervasive in our culture and been as omnipresent, thanks to social media and cable news and the way in which it is today. I think that, but what I fear is that we're going to have one of those awful moments in which there's real serious violence in some place or somewhere, and then someone has to step forward and say, we just can't go on like this. I don't see that happening quite yet. But I think for now we're still in a process, as I was saying yesterday, in which it's going to be a fight to the finish between Trump and his opponents. And the midterms are not going to give us, whichever way they turn out, are not going to make this issue go away. The left is not going to accept Trump, even if Republicans hold on to the House and Senate. And Trump is going to be right where it is, and Democrats won't be able to get him out, even if they do win the House.
Arthur,
so we're in for a siege. We're in for interesting times.
Glenn. I know. I appreciate your patience with me, and I'm going to talk to you about Freedom's Forge
don't
on one of
him.
These.
Don't
on
believe him. One He's of never these. Going to ask you about Freedom's Forge. It's not going to happen.
It's one of my favorite books. I love it.
This is the best of the Glenn Beck program, and don't forget, rate us on iTunes.
Black Tuesday for the Trump administration. Or was it? Two members of the President Trump's inner circle were both found guilty yesterday in federal court. Now, Paul Manafort was convicted on 8 of 18 charges, well, for crimes that, you know, I mean, we all expect from a, you know, a dirty, shady foreign lobbyist. We knew who this guy was long before he ever joined the Trump campaign. It was mostly tax and bank fraud. He was colluding with the Russians, but not for Trump. Years before, he was colluding with Russia to help them get into the Ukraine and take over. That's his collusion, and it had nothing to do with Donald Trump. And that wasn't even brought up in the trial. Now, Michael Cohen, on the other hand, in another court, pleaded guilty to a few charges, most notably to campaign finance violations. Now, I want you to listen to the verbiage in his guilty plea because it is relevant to President Trump. Cohen stated, quote, in violation of campaign finance law at the behest of a candidate for federal office for the principal purpose of influencing an election, end quote. So that's lawyer speak. Can you please translate bullcrap to English? Yes. Quote, yeah, I paid some chicks off, but I only did it because my boss, who was candidate to be president at the time, he asked me to do it. The reason why he wanted me to cover all this up, because, you know, it could change the election. What are you, dope? End quote. The reason for the lawyer speak in the wording of for the principal purpose of influencing an election is because saying it like that matches up directly with the wording of the campaign finance law. U.S. election law states, quote, campaign contributions define as things of value given to a campaign to influence an election must be disclosed, end quote. So Cohen knew exactly what he was doing there. He was going down, but he wanted to wound his old boss once more before he got fitted for his orange jumpsuit and sent to the big house. So now, is this Black Tuesday? Well, let's look again at Manafort. Nothing Manafort was convicted for had anything to do with President Trump. Nothing. The optics look bad, but that's only because the press is spinning it as, here's his campaign guy. Trump fired him. Rightfully so. He was only there at the campaign, and nothing that he's going to prison for has anything to do with the Trump campaign. Again, it's optics. He was once Trump's guy, but in the end, it's just optics. Cohen is different. Cohen's statement is damning. It will fuel impeachment op-eds for months. It will be talked about in panels on every mainstream cable news outlets for months. But consider this. The guy who's saying it is a known liar. The guy he's saying it about is also a known liar. Who do we believe here? Well, as bad as Cohen's accusations towards Trump were, why wasn't that alone worth some sort of immunity deal? Well, probably because Cohen doesn't have any proof. Cohen's going to jail with no deal. Could it be because he actually doesn't have any proof that his boss made him do these things? Because if he did have some sort of a smoking gun, I don't think Cohen would be going to prison right now. So Cohen's big accusation, the news will cover this, and it will dominate CNN and MSNBC for the next month or so, all boils down to this: an accusation, his word against the president's. Now, I am not saying that the president didn't do these things. In fact, I'm pretty sure he did, but that's just my opinion. And my opinion doesn't send anybody to court. It's not what you think or know. In this case, it's what you can prove. And because of that, Black Tuesday? Not hardly.
The Blaze Radio Network. On demand.